Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dear 2020, can we just start over? I'm Dawn O'Porter and I've been thinking about life in lockdown, mostly from a cupboard. My new book, Life in Pieces, is full of thoughts on everything from bad hair and parenting to things we can control and the things we can't. When everything's falling apart, we'll piece it back together. Life in Pieces is out now in hardback, ebook, and audiobook. Hi, I'm Dawn O'Porter. Welcome back to So Lucky, where each week I go deep with my guest and explore all of the sides to all of their stories, the highs and lows, their hopes and fears, their lucky and their unlucky moments. My guest for you this week is the writer Scarlett Curtis, curator of best-selling Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies. She is also the co-founder of the Pink Protest. I love talking to Scarlett because, as she says herself in this chat, we're both the sort of people who go deep and weird with people straight off, and we very much do that here by the shedload. We talk about Scarlett's harrowing experiences with illness as she was a very young kid and living with chronic pain. And if you don't know that about Scarlett, then it's worth a bit of research because she really has risen through something truly, truly devastating. So awful for a young girl to go through anything like that. We also talk about her background, her parents are film director Richard Curtis and broadcaster Emma Freud, and how that gives her an insight into, and as she sees it, a responsibility to talk about privilege. I would like to say that I know Scarlett well and she works so hard. I admire her because, let's face it, what she was born into means she doesn't have to do much at all. But she does, and she does things for a great and better cause. I love this episode. I adore this girl and I hope you enjoy it too. So I'll see you on the other side. But for now, this is me, Dawn O'Porter, talking to the absolutely gorgeous Scarlett Curtis. So could your superpower be, which it kind of is that you can't sleep? You need to utilise that into some sort of good.
I sometimes think it is my superpower, but all I use it for is watching all the TV in the world.
So what time do you usually go to sleep?
I used to, when I was a teenager, I could never get sleep for like 3 or 4. Yeah. And then I think now I can function on very little sleep.
Yeah.
And I do sleep much better, but it's still something I find really hard.
And was the reason that you couldn't sleep because of physical pain?
Yeah. I was just in so much pain because I was very sick from 14, 17. And I think with the kind of pain it was like nerve pain. So it was very hard to fall asleep with that. And then, it's always been my downfall.
Gosh. And how do you feel after a good sleep? Like, what's a good sleep for you?
That thing, not that different. I just don't feel like I'm that affected by sleep, which is a bit odd. But then once I'm asleep as well, I could sleep forever.
Right,
and when
okay.
I get very low, I sleep during the day a lot.
Yeah.
Which is bad. But, you know.
But if you're not feeling great.
Yeah, well, everyone tells you it's bad. Passes the time,
gets you through a day.
Exactly.
You're someone, so this podcast is kind of talking about the idea of luck, and you're someone who I think is a really interesting person to talk to about that, because you've literally said out loud, I've read it, didn't hear you say it out loud, but I've seen it in inverted commas, that you obviously were born into a position where you're so lucky to be white, be privileged, to you're born into success. And so tell me about your luck and if you feel like a lucky person, because to be fair, you've had a lot of shit come your way as a person in terms of physical and emotional.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I definitely do feel really lucky. And I think that was actually always something, even before I got sick, that was a really huge part of our family, because my parents, what I mostly thought of as their job was running Comet Relief.
Right.
And Red Notes Day. And then every, like, 5 years, they'd go off to make a film and we wouldn't see them for 6 months. But, like, I didn't think of that really as their job. Their job every day was doing Red Nose and Comet Relief. And it was kind of, like, within our family, charity was, like, our religion. And the whole idea was, like, we have this luck. and this fortune that a lot of people don't have, it's our duty to give it back and pay back. So that was really sort of like ingrained in me from the day I was born, that if you are lucky, you sort of owe it to, to somehow help others who aren't as lucky as you.
Yeah.
Because it was always like, well, you could have been born into any other family and, you know. So that was definitely a part of it. But aside from that, our family was like very happy, as far as I can remember. I'm sure my parents fought or something, but you know, we were very happy. We were very like, yeah, just happy. And then when I was 14, I had this operation on my spine for scoliosis. It went wrong. And suddenly I went from being this sort of like goody two shoes girl who just loved her friends and pets and school to being in constant pain all the time for like 3 years. No one knew what was wrong with me. And in terms of luck within that, I think it was very confusing because it, now when I look back, I realise how young I was. And I think when you're that young, you don't really understand what's happening or why it's happening. And there are a few things that people would say, like people would say everything happens for a reason.
Right.
And I would, which is, if you have anyone in your life who's sick, don't say that to them.
No.
Because what I would then turn that into is, oh, I must have done something wrong that meant that I deserved this.
Right.
And this was like, I made this happen. And then also I was sort of really mistreated by doctors during that time. And again, was told quite a lot that it was my fault that I was sick. And I think for me, what that led to was like, I have this perfect family who have this amazing life, but I've ruined it. Like, I'm the one, they're unlucky to have me in the family. Like, I've ruined their luck, which was is a really like mad thing to deal with when you're 14.
But then when people are saying things like that to you and you're in physical pain and I can totally imagine that thought going into your head and just escalating.
Yeah, and I just felt like such a burden. Like, I felt like I was ruining my brother's lives. I felt like I'd ruined my mum's life. Like, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. You're just like, oh my God, you know, this family was perfect and then I came along and now, like, everything's ruined. But in terms of how I feel now and why I think, like, the novel and the podcast, everything is, it's such an interesting thing to unpack because in a way, I now feel like I've had these two... Like, whenever anyone says, like, is it okay if we talk about privilege? I'm like, yes, I love it. I think it's so interesting because I've seen both sides of it. Uh-huh. Like, I've seen utter privilege and also how within that, everything can still go wrong and you can be in a wheelchair and discriminated against and abused, everything I went through. And it's like, I think people get really scared about talking about privilege and luck, but I think it's so interesting.
It's so interesting. And it's also one of those conversations where as soon as you open it and start having it, like the idea that, you know, I know lots of people who are in really good positions in their lives and they're not the happy people in my life. Like they're not okay.
Never.
In many, many ways, whether it's infertility, whether it's, you know, bad relationship with parents, whether it's whatever, bad marriage affairs, like this idea that because you're in this position of privilege, that everything is just great. It's just really unfair. So I love that you're so cracked open about it because like nothing that your family had could get you out of pain for 3 years when you were a teenage girl. I mean, it's so brutal.
And they tried so hard. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think one of the reasons when I wanted to make a book about mental health, it had to be an anthology, is like I went through all that physical and then all that mental pain, had every doctor in the world, like we could, you know, pay for anything, any treatment. And it still took me like years and years and years to get out of it. So it's like, well, if we're in that situation as a society where like the top tier of people still can't get help, how bad is this situation? Like, it's terrible, you know? Because, yeah, it's not just to do with money. It's to do with like genuinely not understanding what these problems are.
And also, it sounds like you just weren't listened to and you were kind of brushed aside. The doctor would kind of say that it was your fault or that you were lying about the pain that you're in. Was that something that happened? I'm sure I heard you say that once.
Yeah, it did.
Like, that's just a disgusting attitude coming at you from a healthcare professional. Full stop. It's just so awful.
Totally. And I think what I've realised over the years is how much of that was to do with the fact that I was like, a pink-haired 15-year-old girl.
Right.
Only ever with my mum. Doctor's appointments would be so different when I was with my dad. It was so funny. Like, the difference between how I was treated with my dad compared to my mum.
What was that about?
Just, you know, when I was with my mum, they would basically blame it on us, say we weren't doing well enough, say it was on me. And then if there was kind of my dad there, it would be like, well, we're going to be looking for more options. Mm-hmm. And I just think if people, especially in the medical profession, are quite quick to judge young girls and young women and not believe their pain in a way that, you know, the amount of women that live with endometriosis without getting it diagnosed.
I do, yes, it's agony.
It's, I mean, and one of my best friends is going through a nightmare at the moment where she just can't be diagnosed. And it's like, I'd love to know if there are men out there in similar situations, but it's not something I see. And yet, almost all my female friends are in some kind of pain that they have to live with.
I know. I feel, I talked to Chris about this a lot because obviously he kind of sees me rolling around on the floor in agony for at least a few days a month. And I always think, God, it's just, since my early 20s, I have just taken for granted.
Yeah.
I mean, since, so I have baby, I had babies and now I've got an IUD or whatever you call it here, a coil. So like, it's all quite minimal and calmed down. But up until I got that, it'd be like 10 days a month of through the night physical agony, to the point that when I was pregnant, I was like, I know I'm not going to need an epidural because I've been there. I know.
Yeah.
And I was right.
Yeah.
I'm like, God, I've just completely accepted that pain as part of my life.
Yeah.
And
women are expected to suffer. It's like,
it's so bizarre, isn't it?
We're meant to.
But also the weird thing is that we do.
Yeah.
And I feel like I kind of take it as part of my, I accept it, which is the strange thing.
I had this thing which everyone says to me, and I always say, which is like, I'm really good with pain because I learned so long how to deal with it. And it's like, you say it kind of proudly, and I'm like, I don't want to be good with pain.
I know, isn't it mad? Like, you kind of think that's just something that we say.
Yeah, I want to be good at like running or, you know, speaking French. I don't want to be good at being in pain. Like,
I know,
it's
wild.
Mad.
I know, but we just kind of do. We just kind of accept it. And it's something I feel like I always have this attitude as well. I get to this point where I've just turned 40 and I'm like, what's the point in trying to fix it now? Like, this coil has got me down to like 2 nights of crippling agony a month instead of 10. That's fine. I'll live with that. And then I'll just go through menopause and then I'll be fine.
Totally.
And I kind of see this over the hill thing of this menopause, God knows what we're fucking in for. Like, this is the other thing about being a woman. You go through all this and then you've got, you know that you've got this thing to come and you've got no idea.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, but I see this other side of just like running down hills in pretty dresses through primrose fields.
I know.
Like, it's gonna, I'm just hopefully that
while
this is true.
While all the men are like getting bad hips or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. Old and bald and leaky willies, which I learned about
dream.
Today.
And I think I've definitely reached that point now with mental health where, like, it used to be so bad and now it's so much better. And then you kind of think, well, like, what's the point in trying to make it even better?
Yeah.
Like, I'm definitely, as a person, I'm very good at, like, accepting sort of not great situations.
Right. Is that something you've kind of grown to do?
Yeah, I just think I remember there was this, like, really important moment when I was like 15, I'd sort of been in pain for a year and I really never thought it was going to go. Like, I was like, okay, this is, no, well, this was this moment. Or I was like, I remember I was reading that book, Never Let Me Go.
Wow,
which
yeah.
is like all about kind of acceptance.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could live in hope and be disappointed every week.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could accept this and like make the best of it. And that's just totally what I did. And I kind of, you know, I like started this blog and I like my whole room was just this like obsessive kind of factory where I would never be still for a minute. I would just like make all this stuff from my bed and read all these books and like just sort of really tried to like, yeah, live in it.
Yeah. So on the subject of privilege, I think that kind of moves really closely on to a word that is really horrible, and don't take offence by this because it's just to open the conversation, but nepotism.
Yes.
So you're obviously kind of born into this incredibly successful family and the world is your oyster. Now, I'm all for nepotism because I just like people who work hard. I think it doesn't matter, you know, we're going to be in a position one day where if Arthur Valentine wants to do something, will we, what would that look like?
Yeah.
And I just think my view on that, if say one of them turns around one day and says, I want to be an actor, I want to be a writer, is that I'll help you if you work really hard. And this is what I love about you. Like, anyone who threw nepotism at you, I'd be like, just step back. This girl is a workhorse and a force.
I mean, workaholic, I think, is a better phrase. Yeah, I mean, again, I think, like, privilege is just interesting to talk about. Like, I started... What's weird is... So I'm, like, 24, I've had two books, but because I dropped out of school, I started... journalism when I was 14,
right?
So I'm kind of like 10 years in to my career, so then if you look at it, it does kind of make sense. But nepotism definitely plays a part, and I remember I had this blog called Teen Granny, and not that many people like knew I was just, it was just basically old women who followed my blog, and sometimes we'd meet up and they were like, oh my god, you're 15, that's
really?
insane. Yeah. And in a wheelchair, and none of us expected this. But and then I remember I wrote an article for like the Telegraph or something, and they put a really funny headline that was sort of like all about my parents and stuff. And then, so from the first article I ever wrote, all the comments I got were like, nepotism, nepotism, nepotism. Right. And it never really affected me that much, because I was sort of like, well, yeah, but also, I don't know, I'm just still going to work, and I'm, you know, I am hardworking, and I don't, again, it's that cliche, but like, I think it gets you the foot in the door, but I don't think it like...
You've got to maintain it.
You've got to work on it and stuff. But I also think part of, so I run this activist group, Pink Protest, and everything we do is about like creating campaigns around young women and opportunities around young women. And I think a huge part of the reason I do that and do all the activism that I do is like, because I know what nepotism looks like. Mm-hmm. I know how that works. And the reality is most people don't have that. So, like, if I can use any of what I've got to, like, do that, I don't know. It's a funny one, though, isn't it?
It is a funny one. And also, like, you talk a lot about anxiety and mental health, which is so amazing. You've opened up this huge conversation. I mean, that book, which I was thrilled to be a part of, by the way, is so... I love the fact that it's not, there's some really big names in there, like Emma Thompson and Amelia and all those people, but there's also not, you went for the right people and you cast it really well.
Yeah, it's funny when people say that. I'm like, there's 75 people in the book and you've probably heard of like three of them.
But that's good because they're real stories.
Yeah, and they cover, what I really wanted to do with that is like, you know, I had what I think of as like one of the worst mental health experiences. It destroyed like years and years and years of my life. I tried to take my own life. It destroyed my, like, my family for years, were very affected, like all this stuff, but I still had treatment, was why, you know, was all this stuff, my parents could pay for everything. And I really wanted to be like, well, if I've had that situation, what happens when we look at the intersections of this issue with race and class and gender and sexuality and everything else? Because actually when you look at the stats around that, there's as much inequality within mental health as there is in any other area, you know? But then again, there's that flip side of it, which is like, you can be Sam Smith, you can be James Blake, you can be Emilia Clarke, and you can still be going through a situation that you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy.
Well, I think this is the thing about, I mean, you know, God, I mean, if everyone's talking about it, but Meghan Markle's a great example of someone that's... Every time I read, oh, you know, fuck them, they're loaded, they're the monarchy, they're this, you're just like... God, the LA fires. Oh, the rich people whose houses burned down. Of course there's that. Of course, they're all going to be fine at the end of the day. But to take that kind of, to take away from someone like they haven't got the right to be human or have those feelings because they're privileged is such an unreasonable argument that I see every day on,
completely,
online anyway.
And I sometimes think one of the reasons it gets that bad is because people in those positions don't talk about it as well. And I think it's almost like some people feel like it's this like gaslighting where we're all pretending we don't have privilege or pretending we don't have, it's like if we just all, I think we just all need to talk about all of it more.
All of it more, yeah.
And then it will all become a bit easier instead of it feeling like this kind of huge divide and confusion.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, if, I think if Harry and Meghan were to get up and be like, yeah, we are the royal family, but it's still really hard.
Yeah.
That, in my dreams, it would help.
Yeah, well, her the other day just, like, not saying, I'm fine, to that question was huge.
Amazing.
Because you realise that is what you'd say. You would say, if you're in that position, fine, lovely, Archie's wonderful and everything's dreamy. And the fact that she didn't, it's like, it's kind of made everyone go, oh, okay, let's stop being so cruel.
And I think it's so powerful, and yeah, I have, like, my heart broke when I watched that.
I mean, all of the stuff that you, like, went through, and I know that it's an ongoing thing for you, but when you talk about being 14 to 17 when you're in physical pain, now you're 23.
Four.
24. So recently.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, God, I mean, that almost just happened to you. It feels so far away, because I weirdly met your mum for the first time around that time.
Yeah,
we went on to Comic Relief, and she was, and she'd said to Chris, oh yeah, we're fine, but you know, Scarlett's, you know, she's really not very well. And I didn't know you all at all. That feels like 100 years
it
ago.
Does, yeah.
But in terms of your life, it's just so recent.
Well, it's funny. One funny thing about that is my parents, bless them, used to have this thing where they would just tell everyone what was going on with me. I think it was like their coping thing. So now sometimes I meet people and they're like, didn't you, like, die? Or, like, we're in a wheelchair. I'm like, I'm okay now. But it's funny, because I think, like, so when I was 14 and then 17, 3 years was, like, such a huge percentage of my life, and it felt like it had been happening forever.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes now when I think about it, I'm like, it wasn't that long. But to a 17-year-old...
Oh, 3 years is ages.
To a 17-year-old,
absolutely.
Feels like your whole life.
Yeah.
And now... like, in some ways it does feel like so long ago, and then some days it just feels so recently.
I bet it does.
Yeah, and I think that's part of, like, trauma as well. I was in the doctor the other day and I was talking about, like, stuff I went through.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to write your age on a form, and I almost wrote 19.
How
I was
interesting.
Like, oh, that's so weird.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm literally back to being 19.
Yeah. And so,
very funny.
It's like, I mean, I feel like everything that you do feels, I'm just endlessly surprised by your age, because you've got such a mature attitude towards feminism, towards activism, towards so much of it. Where does that come from? Is that from just observing those amazing parents?
That's very nice. Yes, I think a lot of it comes from them. A lot of it comes from, like, once I left school, I think I was mostly with adults.
Right.
It's like a big thing. I was at, like, a dinner the other day, and I was like, oh, it's just me and all my best friends. And then I looked around, everyone was over the age of 50. And
really?
I was like, oh my gosh.
Because you just shut yourself off from that teenage social life. Right?
I was like, oh, we're all so similar. Like, we're all going through menopause. And I was like, oh, I'm really not. I'm actually 22 and I should probably get a life.
How are you at being on your own?
I think, yeah, I'm like too good at it.
Right.
Way too good at it. Over my life, I've spent so much time just on my own, and what I became really obsessed with, because I think, because I was out of school and I was so worried about, like, not getting an education, mm-hmm. I just became obsessed with reading, watching the news, like, trying to teach myself stuff. And also, for me, I found feminism kind of through reading when I was, like, 16, mm-hmm. and then when I moved to New York when I was 19, and I joined this, like, feminist group there. And that was sort of the first time I'd made friends since I was 14. And reading about feminism was the first time I understood what I'd been going through,
mm-hmm.
from the, like, as in, it wasn't my fault, maybe this was part of a bigger system. And it really, there's a piece that I wrote in this book, in the blue book, but it's called, like, Feminism as a Form of Self-Help, because I think it literally, like, that was the thing for me that got me that helped let me recover.
Well, like, it's a community as well, as once you realise that you're all having a similar experience, and, you know, the more that women club together and they create these groups and do this thing,
amazing.
Then it's all going to get better one day.
It's the best feeling in the world. Like, I think sometimes we talk about the downsides and I'm like, it's given me all my friends.
Yeah.
It's given me, like, everything I love in the life. It's like the best thing in my life.
Yeah, and also part of feminism is that thing of women clubbing together and the power of what happens when women come together. One of my favourite people in the world is your mother.
Yes.
And your dad. I don't know him as well. But what I love about Emma is I don't think I've ever met anyone so warm, opening, welcoming, friends with everyone, but genuinely, because when she doesn't like one, they can literally fuck off. So it's like, I really trust her.
I know.
And I love the fact that she's completely unedited and completely unguarded when she's in conversation with you. And what's she like as a mum?
She's a wonderful mum. She loves you as well. It's funny, every therapist I've ever been to has been like, you need to be more present. And I'm like, my parents are so present. I've almost like seen the downside of being so present. Like, they are both so amazing and in the moment, and I think if anything, I've always found that the only thing I found hard about it, like, they're the most amazing parents, but I've found it hard in that, like, I'm much more introverted than them.
Right.
I'm much more analytical than them. Like, I can't make a decision without thinking about it for like a week. I can't, if I go to something, I have to like process it afterwards, and they're just not like that at all. And I think for a while I felt really like, why do I not love having a million people in our house every day?
Right. It's very open door family,
yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, our house is literally a train station. And I was like, why do I feel anxious all the time? And I was like, oh, maybe you're just meant to have a slightly like quieter life. And then also I get worried if I introduce new friends to my mum too quickly because they always like her more than me.
Well, the thing is she's either boiling the kettle or opening some wine. It's just everyone's welcome.
Or cooking. She's like she's just, and I'm not like that. I'm like this person that just wants to talk about books in the corner. But it's nice having that in my life.
You said something to me once, and I've asked you to repeat it to me before, and I can't remember what it was again. I came to see you with one of my babies, I think it was Valentine, when he was just born. I came to see you and your mum. And you said something about the kind of mum that she was, that was just so lovely, and it made me really live by it. And I can't remember what exact wording was, but it was something along the lines of how she always just put you all first, no matter what was going on, and you felt that so strongly. I wish I could remember exactly what it is, but I remember just sitting there with my baby and looking at you guys and just thinking, this is the relationship that I want, because I lost my mum when I was young. So when I see that relationship with a mum and a kid, I'm like, I want to be like that. And the way that you guys talk like your mates.
Yeah, we definitely do.
And are you the oldest?
Oldest and only girl.
All right, so the oldest of four.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think, yeah, it's been funny. I mean, I also think for anyone who's like been sick, your relationship with your parents becomes quite complicated for a while, and it was definitely complicated. And then I think as I've gotten older, and it is just like we're friends. And
yeah,
I think me learning that was a really big thing as well.
Right.
But yeah, and I mean, I don't know, it's great. I had this teacher at school that, because quite a lot of my friends are like really close with their family.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather be with my family than with anyone in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, this is not normal. Like, you're meant to leave home when you're 18 and like, that's it. And I was like, no, all me and my friends want to do is hang out with our parents. And it's great.
It's so lovely.
And he was like, no, you're all going to like have some weird stinted growth in the future. It's going to be like an epidemic.
Well, it's like most people are like, you know, dreading going home for Christmas in July. How are we going to do this?
I'm like counting the days and like would rather be with my family than anyone.
It's so wonderful, Scarlett. It's so lovely, because I just feel like I'm relentlessly sitting around with people slagging off parents. If they're listening, by the way, love mine. I was talking about other people. In terms of you and your future, and do you make plans? Are you the kind of person that thinks, right, by 26 I want to be doing this, by 30 I want to be doing this, or are you just kind of drifting?
Definitely not. In like a very sort of dark way, I think I thought I would be dead by now.
Right.
Like, at many points in my life, like when I was young, when I first got sick, I was like, there's no way I'm going to kind of make it. And then I thought I was going to be in a wheelchair my whole life. And then I thought I was going to be depressed my whole life. And I remember this one day where I just really made the decision. I was like, it's going to be fine. Like, I'm never going to be able to leave the house. I'm never going to be able to live on my own. I'm never going to be able to, like, go to sleep. But it'll be okay. I'll get cats and I'll, like, watch all the TV in the world and it'll be great. And then suddenly I, like, got better. And I think, I almost think I might want to, like, my New Year's resolutions every year are like, I want to drink more, I want to go out more, I want to have more fun, I want to be a more normal 23-year-old. Like, I want to, weirdly, the stuff I find easy is the work and the, that stuff, and the stuff I find really hard is, like, the being a young person stuff.
Right. In terms of being sociable, are you, do you have much of a social life, or you kind of get people around and sit in your kitchen kind of person?
My social life is definitely sort of formed through my work. Mm-hmm. So I think it's weird. I always describe it as, like, I sometimes think of my brain as, like, when I got, this is a really weird analogy, but when I got sick, it was like my brain was this, like, city, and then it all got bombed. And, you know, when you see those pictures from World War II where there's, like, one building mm-hmm. standing, like, in my head, the one building standing was work. And it was, for some reason, the only thing. Like, after I, over the last few years, like, I used to not be able to make friends. I used to not mm-hmm. be able to go on dates. I used to not be able to go to parties, but I could work. So I was like, I'll just do that. And then through work, I met, like, the most amazing people. And now I have friends I love mm-hmm. and, like, I'm definitely more social than I thought I was. Like, I am learning how to rely on people mm-hmm. and trust people and let people in and not be like, I have this amazing friend called Paddy, and I remember I was like sort of 19 and I was like, you should just always say, like, I've got no friends. And it was like my thing. And then he's turned to me and he was like, it's so rude when you say that. Aww. Like, we're your friends. Yeah. Like, we love you. Right. You just don't let us in. Mm-hmm. And it was such a big wake up, because it was like, oh yeah, I don't have to be this person anymore. I think we get these rules about ourselves in our head, and it's really hard to let go of them. You'll be yeah. like, I'm the kind of person who, and it's really hard to change them. So I've been trying to, like, learn that I can be the kind of person who does all those things I never thought I was going to do.
Yeah. And do you like being sociable? Like, how are you walking into a room of people that you don't know?
I have a thing where I'd actually rather go to a party alone than I would with someone.
Well, I mean, that's bold.
Because I just think you can leave whenever you want.
Right, okay.
You know, like, you're not...
Yeah.
And you can, like, go to the Louvre for, like, half an hour if yeah. you want a little break, and you don't have that person worrying about you. I mean, I still find it sometimes quite mm-hmm. hard to socialise, but, yeah, again, I'm just trying not to... almost not to say things like that as much.
Right.
Because... yeah, one day I think I go very deep with people very mm-hmm. quickly, which is sometimes a bit weird,
right?
And hard.
But it's hard not to do that.
Yeah,
and it's hard. You almost want people to just know your story and just understand you.
Yeah, and also it's the thing that makes me feel safe, because I'm like, I need to know you've been through.
Right,
you're weird as well.
Yeah,
like, I need to know you're a human. Like, I remember I went to a party with my friend once, and she's, like, really flirty and amazing, and by the end of the night she had, like, you know, three guys' numbers uh-huh. and I was, like, in the corner with this boy who was, like, sobbing about his dead parents, and she was like, yeah, this is us. And I think the boy who was sobbing had given her his number.
Right,
like,
okay.
It was just like, that's always going to be what I get out of people.
Yeah, I know, but also it's, I think when you've been through something, you can't just turn it off. And there's a kind of, I think what's really lovely, and it's actually a really nice quality, is you're like, this is who I am. Let's just get this straight from the start yeah. of the conversation, because I'm not going to, like, disappoint you later if you find that disappointing for some reason.
Yeah.
I totally get that, because, well, I used to do that thing when I was, I always used to say to my sister, at what point when you meet a new person do you tell them that our mum died?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you don't need to. And I was like, no, they need to know because it's at that, at your age, I was like, it's everything that I am.
So,
and therefore I'd be meeting someone and I would just find a way within the first, like, six sentences to just slip in
mm.
that my mum had died, so we just got that on the table.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, of course.
Reversing. Do you, because I'm definitely like that as well, mm. and you, do you ever feel like overexposed?
all the time, yeah. all the time.
Because it's with social media as well. Yeah. I'm suddenly feeling, and I've never felt this before, but I'm suddenly like, oh, I've shared too much.
Okay, well, that's because you've just been on the press trail yeah. for your book, so you're going to feel like that, and I always feel like that after I've done a book tour. Because
it's get a asked, weird feeling, though,
it's a
as
weird
well.
Feeling. You've been and asked the, all those
I
questions.
Think the place I'm in is like, I'm talking about, you know, like, if you look at suicide rates mm-hmm. and suicidal thoughts and all of that, it's such a prevalent issue. And I decided this 1 month after they talk about it, and then, you know, suddenly you're like, okay, I know loads of people have been through this,
yeah.
but I'm the only one talking about it. And then I just feel like I want everyone else to catch up.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, oh, I've just shared all this stuff and yeah. and I know everyone around me there. Is feeling it, and I get messages on Instagram. But when I go out on the streets, I'm the only one that, you know, or I go to a party, like,
yeah.
I'm the only one that people...
That are people are saying it because your audience is so big.
Not so big, it's just you've done yeah, it publicly.
But you said it publicly, and it's such a weird feeling. I mean, you've got to remember when you start to feel like that, why you set out to do this whole thing in the first place. And you know that when you say that, someone is listening and they're thinking about their situation in a more open way, and that maybe they'll start talking about it. You might not hear about it, but you're opening up all these little conversations all over the place that you don't know about. And that doesn't help for your feeling of like isolation as the only person that's doing it. But my advice is just take a huge break, because yeah. as you let it settle, you'll realise that you're probably more comfortable with what you've said than it feels like. It's just a bit bombastic when it's all yeah. happening at once.
How do you decide what to share and not share?
I mean, it's really difficult, and I blur the lines all the time. Yeah. I try not to talk about the kids. Now, I wrote about right. the kids in the Sunday Times on Sunday, and
yeah,
I really
loved that.
It was great, and I really liked it, but I also felt like I slagged off my kid in a newspaper.
It's
and I feel really uncomfortable about it. And I've been on the press trail all week this week, because at time of recording, this is my book press week. And people keep saying, you're really open about how hard it is having toddlers. And I'm like, no, I'm not really.
Yeah,
and
well, that's you're in exactly really, the same situation.
Yeah.
Everyone finds having toddlers hard. It's just people still say it's easy.
I know.
So then you're like, oh my God, am I an awful
mother? I know. Yeah. And then also I kind of feel like Chris and I just have a flat out rule. We don't really share much about the kids at all.
Yeah.
So, but I've just written a book where, you know, it's one of the themes is motherhood and the main
and
character.
And you need to share about motherhood. And it's yes. such a... Yeah, yeah.
it. I've had so much amazing feedback about that piece, and if I'm honest with you, when my head hits the pillow, I'm like, I shouldn't be talking about my babies in newspapers. So I really do understand how you feel.
I know.
And, but I know that I'll be fine after this, because I'm now, right now, being asked those questions and on all the time. And in a couple of months, when that's not happening, same
yeah.
for you, it will all be okay.
Yeah.
And it all just settles, and it will all be okay, and then you'll do another book and it will happen again.
Yeah.
And it's just a really, it's part of it. Everyone will feel the same way, because especially when you write, it's very personal and people go in with very personal questions.
Yeah.
And if you're going to write about personal things that matter, like mental health, then...
But also what's weird is you write and you don't think about talking about it.
No, because like, you're on your own for months.
Yeah, I was like, I'm really happy to write all this stuff in my book. I don't know how I feel about like saying it.
I know,
you
know? It's hard. And
I did
it's
this
a hard
Irish
thing.
Radio show the other day.
What was it?
It's very nice. I'm not going to say, but it was a very nice presenter. It was like 9 a.m. and he goes, oh, hello, Scarlett.
Very good.
I was like, hi. And he goes, so you tried to kill yourself.
Oh my
and I
God.
Was like, ah.
Do you know what? I went on a late night Irish radio show, and I'm used to Saturday night TV being quite jolly.
Mm.
Walk out on stage, sit down. He goes, so your mum died when you were six. I was like, oh my God, like, did not think. I don't know why they do that over
there. It's so one level too much of openness.
It's just, but it's also like, ease in, mate. Come
yeah,
on. It's
ease
like,
in. I'll see what I have for breakfast and then
yeah,
do it.
For me, for you, and for the audience. It's
yeah,
quite, it's,
yeah, for
it's,
the audience as well.
It's hard. But you know, when you're talking about death and mental health, and someone, most people aren't comfortable talking about it.
Mm.
That's why everything you're doing is going to pay off for society. And that's a promise, because you're going to make the conversation easier. People, when they're in a position where they have to interview, they haven't got time. Or they don't want to look like they're nervous to do it, so they just bowl in with like
yeah,
this
yeah.
big question,
yes, exactly.
And you're like, oh God, okay. And it's
and they don't. What I've found is people think about the questions, they don't think about the answer.
That's very true.
And then you're like, how do you want me to answer that?
Yeah,
like
yes, well, I remember
telling you I did it.
I remember doing a show about breast cancer years ago, and I was interviewing someone who was really not very well,
mm.
and I was taking my time to ask her how she was doing, realizing that this is a sensitive subject. Mm. And my director at the time just kind of yelled over my shoulder, "Can you ask her what the prognosis is?" And it was like, oh my God, yeah. I'm looking this woman in the eye. And I think sometimes when people have got their TV or radio hat on, they're just thinking about, you're wrong, actually, they are thinking about the answer. They just want the soundbite.
They want the soundbite.
And that's,
yes.
They just want you to say something dramatic. Anyway, we don't have long left. Can we yes. end on fluffy animals, please?
Yes.
So what fluffy animals are currently living in your house?
So I actually now live 10 minutes down the road from my parents.
When did that happen?
That happened like, because I lived in New York 4 years, uh-huh. then I moved back, lived with them for about 6 months, but I got very re-traumatised being, because I was back in the bedroom, I'd literally been like right. locked in for years. So I moved out quite quickly, but I'm still very close, and I take the animals on loan. I have a cat called Christmas, oh. and he mostly stays at mine. And then we really have a lot of cats now. We have like 5 cats.
That's my dream.
A tortoise called Larry Nutsack.
Come on.
A dog.
What's the dog called?
Posey.
Oh, you've met Posey. I know Posey.
Posey's a legend. Posey, I think, I like so... If there's one form of therapy I believe in, it's animal therapy.
Oh, absolutely.
I got Posey when I was 16. She immediately... It was like kind of getting a seeing eye dog, but for depression and
right.
it being sick. Like, I couldn't walk. She didn't want to walk. I couldn't really talk. She just was silent all day. Like, she literally lay on my lap and looked after me for 4 years.
Sweet baby.
I would not go anywhere without her. My mum, one of my operations, my mum brought her into hospital and they were like, "What the hell are you doing?" But yeah, if you're going through a hard time, consider getting an animal.
Yes.
And yeah, I just think they like change everything.
Sweet babies, I love them so much. We say potatoes like a therapy dog.
Yeah.
He's just good feelings. Lulu's ruining our lives.
You're one of the only
wonderful.
People who is as obsessed with their animals as us. And also we have in similar being like dog and cat people.
Yeah. An equal measure.
Well, I'm definitely a cat person.
Maybe I am actually, if I was honest.
Our dog is basically a cat. I don't believe in the only binary I believe in the whole world is dog or cat people. I truly think everyone is one or the other.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
Note to end on.
Thank you, Scarlett.
It's my next book.
Yeah.
Are you a dog? You can be a dog and cat person and other lies.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, my love. Thank you so much, Scarlett, for talking to me on the podcast. Scarlett's latest book, It's Not Okay to Feel Blue and Other Lies, is out now in print, ebook, and audiobook. So Lucky will be taking a short break over the festive season, but I'll be back early in the new year with some more brilliant guests. So please do make sure you're subscribed to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on your smart speaker of choice so you get each one as it drops. If you enjoyed this conversation, I'd so appreciate a review on whatever platform you're using to listen to this. It helps more people find out about the podcast. And if you just can't get enough of me, my own book, also called So Lucky, is out now in print, ebook, and audiobook. It might make quite a good Christmas present. Thanks again to Scarlett, to producer Emma Corsham at Rethink Audio, to Fanula, Liz, Kim, and all the team at HarperCollins, and to you for listening. Happy Christmas.